And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Gilbert Ford Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary T. Gilbert. It's my co-host, Dan McFord. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, I'm doing so wonderful.
Doing good?
Doing so fabulous.
Yeah.
Having a great day.
Some wild news out there. I don't know if you heard one word, Trump. Right, people? Yeah. Some wild stuff right there.
Sure.
That's my political take. Hey, guys, you about the Trump? Yeah. And then, like, and then I need you to do, like, the Kevin Eubanks guitar thing. That's my Jay Leno impression. Wow. But speaking of people out of work, Dan, we had a pretty big firing in your neck of the woods today. It looks like Mr. Coach Godfrey out at NC State, despite having relevance for the first time in a while. Like, NC State had a big win this year.
I think part of what killed him is that this year's team isn't the team people thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you get one of probably the best recruit NC State's gotten in Lord knows how many years in Dennis Smith, but they just haven't been able to do anything with him. And it reminded too many NC State fans of, you know, how Cat Barber was probably the best player in the ACC in previous versions of the NC State team, and NC State didn't win anything with him. So, it's rough. I have my problems with it because we're talking about a guy who in his first four seasons went 24-13, 24-11, 22-14, 22-14, made the NCAA tournament all 4 years. Yes, last year sucked. They had a losing season. Yes, this year wasn't looking too much better. But, I mean, when the guy starts off his first 4 years making the tournament and has two Sweet 16s, this feels like a really short rope. And I feel like this is all Archie Miller's fault. Because I wonder if this firing happens if Archie Miller isn't out there at Dayton.
Yeah, It weirdly reminds me of, like, this kind of dangerous path, I kind of think, for coaches who are rebuilding a program. I call it, like, the Butch Jones effect, where you set up expectations, you're probably too good too quick, and then it kind of ruins your whole tenure at that school, because they expect more when really you just peaked a little too early
Or you were just following, like, a really terrible coach.
Yeah.
Like, the guy who was there before you was a like complete imbecile.
Yeah, same, you know, similar situation with Butch Jones at Tennessee, where you have Derek Dooley.
Yeah, and where you just can't help but improve things.
Yeah,
because the guy before you was an idiot.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of hurt Butch at Tennessee. It'll probably be why he gets fired next season. It's the handling of the program, obviously, but the expectations he kind of set up kind of a comeback to screw him over. And I think it sounds like a similar situation at NC State. And when you have a player who's going to go top three in the NBA draft and your team's not looking so hot, it kind of does rub the fan base the wrong way, I think. Like, I can't imagine there are too many Washington fans who are, like, super happy that team's not so great with the number one pick in the NBA on their team.
It's just, I get why they're firing him. I get it. I'm not ready to, like, rend my garments and scream about how bullshit and unfair this is. But if they get Archie Manning, if they get Archie Miller, then it's like, all right, worked. Like, you got the better coach. He's an alumni. He's probably never going to leave you. Good job. But if they don't get Archie Miller, this is going to be kind of stupid, in my opinion. But I feel like I kind of have to reserve judgment until I see who they get.
Yeah, but we won't really know who they're going to get because he's going to finish out the season with NC State. So hopefully NC State goes on a miracle run and wins the whole thing. Then we can see what happens.
Yeah, that'd be funny as hell. Yeah, that would be funny as hell.
Classic NC State there. But speaking of basketball, Dan, we've reached the halfway point of the NBA season. We haven't really talked too much NBA on this show. But I've kind of dove into the NBA, especially since football's gotten over. And this is a lot of fun. I really like this pool. It's way less crowded than the NFL pool. There aren't as many, like, racist, horrible people in here. So it kind of feels nice. Like, this pool's not full of piss. It's nice and cold. there's some beautiful ladies and like good conversation here. So,
what is that comment of at the shrillest? He writes politics about MTV. The way that he, like, his quick and dirty way of picking out whether somebody's not really a racist is if they like the NBA.
Yeah,
it's like that's one of his ways of judging.
Basketball is my way of judging kind of if you're cool, especially for like uncool looking people, we'll call them, so to speak. Maybe certain people with lighter skin. It's kind of notice fucking bond with somebody. Yeah.
If there's anything you hate, it's people who don't want to be cool.
Yeah. Because, like, Dan, I'll be honest. I've had friends in college, high school, who, like, had deplorable opinions. Like, awful, horrible, racial opinions. Like, things I totally disagree with, but I could talk NBA with them. So, like, I'm kind of an asshole myself. So, like, I didn't hate them that much. Because at least they knew, at least they knew, who, like, Eric Gordon was or something like that. So I'll take that sometimes,
My number one way to disregard somebody is if they try to tell me college basketball is better than the NBA.
Yes.
If they tell me that they watch more college basketball because their favorite team is a college basketball team, I got it. I'm with you. I get it. Like, you're a UNC fan. You watch that more than you watch the NBA. Totally get it.
Yeah, but you love Kentucky basketball. Don't try to tell me that it's better. Yeah. That's fine.
Don't try to tell me that it's better basketball. Like, don't do that. Don't even try.
I think the most annoying, like, it's, you get this mostly, you might have run into this, Dan, like, here in the South, you get, like, these older white guys, like, who are in, like, their 70s and 60s, who, like, I guess they're just kind of scared of the genetic superiority of some NBA players. They're just like, why would you want to watch someone who's 6 feet tall dunk? And I'm like, because I'm watching someone who's 6'7". Jump up. Like, it's fun. They're huge.
Oh, I've
like,
never heard that argument. Yeah. I thought you were going to go the, they don't play defense.
No, if they don't play defense, you're stupidest. That's when you know not to argue with somebody. Even if they're talking about the NFL, and they're like, well, they don't play good defense. Who the fuck cares, Dan, if the defense is good besides geeks like you and me? Like, if I'm a regular Joe watching football, I don't want to watch a 2-0 game.
Well,
and if I'm watching basketball, I don't want to watch an 80-75 game. I want to watch Warriors Rockets, and I want to see, like, 300 points between both teams. Like, that's fun.
It's also one of, like, the most obviously stupid arguments, because, one, college basketball games are shorter, so, yeah, the point totals are going to be less. It's not, like, if the defense doesn't have to be, like, really good to score fewer points when the game is shorter.
And Dan, the talent level is so far beneath,
and that's without you starting getting to that where it's like, okay, half the guys in college cannot hit a jump shot.
Yeah.
Like, if it's not a layup, they're not scoring. And then the other half ain't great shooters. Like, if you're lucky as a college if you have one guy who can actually hit open shots. And then you're lucky if you have more than two guys who can dribble well.
Yeah. That's
without even getting into, like, the rampant fouling that doesn't get called in college. Like, you can just grab a guy by his shorts, rip them down, pants him in front of everybody, and, like, if you're in the Big Ten, they're not going to call it.
Yeah. And I think, like, bring it back to the NBA, what's been so fun about this year is, I think, I may have the stat wrong, but I believe I read it the other day, only two teams in the NBA right now are averaging less than 100 points per game. It might be four teams, something like that. I think it's 28 or 26 teams are averaging something around over 100 points per game. And the offense has just been so much fun to watch in the NBA. Like, even if you watch a team like the Pistons, you can watch Reggie Jackson, who's a fun player to watch. The Milwaukee Bucks have the most exciting young player in the NBA right now. It's such a fun time for NBA and basketball, and I kind of feel like they're not... NBA is going to get even bigger, in my opinion. I think that you're going to see, like, another kind of boom period, if you will, Dan, for basketball and the NBA in particular.
Yeah, it feels
especially,
like it.
Feels like, well,
it.
Especially when, as budget issues continue, for not even colleges, but for even high schools... And we could see football the next decade kind of on the chopping block in some places you wouldn't have thought it would have been.
Well, I mean,
especially
the NBA
as
has,
concussions and lawsuits come around, And basketball is just,
If you get to the point where it becomes, like, mandatory that you have doctors at, like, all the games, you have to have, like, a full medical staff, you know, it's going to be hard for some school districts to afford. Yeah.
And it's not even the doctors have to be there, Dan, because you can always get a, you know, there's probably a doctor who has a, had a, you know, a kid who played on the team. It's the insurance payments that schools are going to have to pay when they get sued if a child gets a dramatic brain injury or something like that. Oh, you know? So
I think schools will have, like, I don't think you can sue schools for that kind of stuff, can you?
Well, I mean, you can sue anybody for anything, Dan. It's just a matter of
well, a lot of, getting a lot of the schools lawyer, have, yeah. like, yeah, a lot of schools have, like, we can ask Coughlin about this, but I feel like a lot of local governments, like, have, you can't sue us. We're indemnified.
I think that is, but then, like, then you in turn can maybe go and sue the athletic association. There's probably someone liable, and a good lawyer is going to find someone to sue, or at least make a big stink and make someone lose their job about it.
Sure. Make everybody uncomfortable.
Yeah. Because I think the more we kind of learn about football, and it's just, and I love football, Dan. It kind of helped me develop a personality and gave me confidence. But I could have gotten that from other sports. It wasn't just football that was special. And I feel like it's on its way out over the next 10 to 20 years. We didn't mean to kind of make this a discussion, but football is king. So let's kind of, you want to kind of go back and forth with this real quick, Dan? Like this kind of idea that maybe basketball will maybe not overtake football, but kind of boom in popularity as football declines.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're already seeing that. Like, the NBA's been going up in popularity. Basketball, this is the thing people don't necessarily realize. Basketball and football had very similar trajectories for many, many years in that they were wildly popular at the high school and college level, and nobody gave a shit about the pro versions.
Yeah.
And then the NFL took off in the 60s. And we did an episode about that in the early days of this podcast, pre-Half Guarded, that, you know, if you can find it, it's a good episode. But
good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
We'll rerun that when I'm on vacation in the summer.
Sure, sure, sure. But, like, with basketball...
Basketball,
it,
yeah.
It became a very popular sport in rural America because you have schools, like, for instance, my granddad graduated from a school. There was 12 people in his graduating class.
Yeah.
Brother, that was not easy to field a football team with 12 people in the whole high school.
No, Dad, I mean, I played
off the farm.
I grew up playing in, like, a private school league in Georgia. So, I mean, I remember playing one team, and the school shut down their football program the next year. But that year, that team had 16 players on the whole team. So you were going both ways. You were going every way on that team. You know.
Like, football is harder to field a team for. It's difficult to be competitive.
And it's really hard to go both, like, regardless of the level of talent you're playing, when you're getting hit every single play, football's not as fun.
No.
You know? When you can't just kind of focus on one position to kind of have fun with, it's not fun when you got to play offensive guard, then turn around and play linebacker, and you're gunner on this team, and it's just, you know, where's the fun in that? So I kind of agree with you there that smaller rural areas kind of helped keep basketball alive in this country
and it was the first sport that really had a women's, like, you could have a women's team.
Yeah.
People don't realize that, you know, women's basketball was played in the South at a high school level going back to, like, the 20s.
Yeah.
You know, so basketball has some deeper roots than I think sometimes people give credit for. The issue is that the NBA just had no ability to capitalize on that popularity for so many decades. And so I think in a lot of ways, basketball is like this sleeping giant that's finally in the last 10 years started to wake up at the pro level.
Yeah. I think when you kind of judge basketball versus the NBA specifically against the other pro sports, in reality, the NBA didn't really hit the national scene until, like, the mid-70s at the earliest, and really the mid-80s is when they kind of...
It's really Julius Erving who put pro basketball on the map.
Yeah.
You know, outside of the Northeast. And then, yeah, the 80s, it's Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. Yeah. I mean, the NBA's history, you can talk about Wilt Chamberlain, you can talk about George Mikan, you can talk about Bill Russell. Nobody gave a shit, nobody came to those games.
Yeah.
Nobody knew about them, and the NBA Finals was on tape delay. Pro basketball, for all intents and purposes, did not exist until Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, as far as a thing anybody gave a shit about.
Yeah, they kind of set the table, and then, of course, Jordan in the 90s took away with it, and now we sit here today, Because they, like, even the NBA had its kind of weird dip here in the early aughts. And then, yeah, like, this buku of talent kind of fell in their laps with LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, etc. It
feels to me like the sport feels far more, in a far safer position because it feels less personality-driven. Like, yeah, the NBA of the 80s was like Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and Julius Erving, and that's it. Like, and people wanted to see those big personalities clash. They didn't really care about the game so much as they wanted to see Larry versus Magic.
No, or even the 90s, teams.
Yeah, they didn't even care. They didn't care about the game. They just wanted to see Michael.
Yeah.
Where it seems like today, people have a far more, they're are far more interested in the game itself, which is a healthier position to be in for the sport, that people are actually interested in who wins. They care more about who's going to win the thing than what personality is on top.
And they care more about the team. You know, people got onto LeBron and Wade and Bosh, you know, or Durant forming these super teams, and it's, you know, these selfish millennials. But in reality, they're being very unselfish compared to some of these past players because they're saying, well, I don't mind giving up some things if it means I can win a championship.
Yeah, that was weird how that got framed as, like, you're selfish for wanting to be on the best team and win the most games. That's funny how that worked.
Yeah, and, like, not have everything on your back. And but I think that helps with the branding of the NBA because, like, you still have people today who maybe started following the Heat when LeBron came there and they stayed with the Heat. You know, you're going to have people who are going to stick with the Warriors for the next 10 years, like even your front runners. So I think that's been a nice thing. And it feels like this season, though, is this, like, beautiful, not accumulation, but this first, like, glimpse of how fun the NBA can be. You know, Russell Westbrook's chase to average a triple-double. The season Harden's having. The Warriors are just an amazing team to watch night in, night out. But even, you know, on the non-kind of main event level, the upper card of the NBA, if you will, there's a lot of fun stuff there, whether it's Denver, or it's, you know, the Wizards playing well, or it's can the Raptors kind of figure it out. You've got Isaiah Thomas, one of the most exciting players in the league to watch. It just feels right with the NBA. Like, if I compare this season to the season the NFL just had, there's a lot more goodwill coming to the NBA right now.
And I think one of the and this is another thing, the reason why the NBA, I think, is in better shape than ever, is that for years, people in the NBA thought, well, if the Lakers and the Celtics and the Knicks aren't good, we're fucked. We're fucked as a league. One of those three teams has got to be great, and preferably two. And if we get all three, then we'll finally be in business. Major League Baseball talks about like that a lot, because they still like, well, if the Yankees aren't good, we're fucked.
Yeah.
But the NFL doesn't talk like that. The NFL doesn't care if the Cowboys are good. If they are, okay, great. That's good. But they don't sit around going, oh my God, the Cowboys aren't good. What are we going to do? Oh my God, the Giants aren't good. It's like, because they know that the league is popular enough that, okay, if Phoenix gets popular, like Phoenix gets good, they'll get popular because the sport is popular.
And
what
we've
seen with the NBA is that this is the strongest the NBA's probably ever been, and the Lakers are trash and the Knicks are trash, and it's okay.
No. Yeah.
The league doesn't need the Lakers. It doesn't need the Knicks.
Because one of the highest non-Christmas game day ratings in nearly a decade, in the digital era, if you will, was Warriors Thunder, a team from San Francisco and Oklahoma City. You know, people don't care about these marquee names in the NBA necessarily anymore. Like, they care about the stars, but if the Knicks are playing,
well,
that's
fine,
you know.
They care about the stars, but no, it's not like the star has to play for the Lakers or else he's not a star.
Yeah, that was kind of my point, Dan. It's because even people want to watch Milwaukee now because of, like, the fun nucleus on that team. And, of course, you know, the news a couple of weeks ago about Jabari Parker kind of hurts and derails kind of the fun with Milwaukee. But anytime you have a player like the Greek Freak, he's just going to be fun to watch. And a guy who's perfect for this era because his YouTube highlights are wonderful.
The NBA knock on wood, but they've reached that point that the NFL's been at for years where if you're really, really awesome at basketball, you become a star now.
Yeah.
You don't have to play on a certain team. You don't have to have a certain kind of personality. You know, it's not like you got to be like, an MMA star where it's, you know, if you're going to be a big star in MMA, Oh God, I'm talking MMA. This is talking MMA.
It's talking MMA.
Like, it's not enough to be a great fighter to be an MMA star. You've got to have a mix of personality and fight skill. And that's the way it used to be in the NBA, and no longer. If you're just really, really awesome, like, you're going to be a star.
Yeah. And well, I think that's kind of...
That used to be true of baseball, and it's still true of the NFL, and it's no longer true of baseball. Because, like, it doesn't matter. Who's the best player in baseball? People, like, is it Bryce Harper? Is it Mike Trout?
Because you even recognize Bryce Harper if you saw him on TV. You know, I would recognize LeBron James out of uniform.
I mean, if Mike Trout walked right in here and slapped my sister, I wouldn't know.
Yeah. But I think there's another thing that kind of helps the NBA, and it kind of seems like as America gets a little more socially progressive, if you will, the NBA is the perfect league to take advantage of that, because this is one of your more diverse leagues. And, you know, in American sports, I mean, this is a league with, you know, that's had women reps for, feels like, decades now. There are female coaches on teams. This is a league, if you're a woman, I mean, there are some issues at times, and then, you know, there was that story about, you know, how the rookie symposium and how players were taught, you know, it kind of came off kind of misogynist, but this is a league that's very progressive, at the very least. Like, even if you're a female, you can get into it. You're saying baseball's not progressive
when 80% of the league's players voted for Trump?
No.
Are you saying there's a difference between baseball players and football players who are terrified to admit they even have a personality, let alone a political idea.
Yeah. It's, like, to me, the NBA is always, like, I kind of have an essay I wrote in college. I never published it or anything. It's something I wrote for fun. But it was kind of comparing the three kind of ways of looking at economic systems, Dan, where baseball is pure capitalism. You know, it's you do your own thing. Nothing else really matters. Football is straight communism. Everyone's got to rely on everybody. But basketball is like this nice little hybrid of both. Some may call it like democratic socialism, where team matters, but you can still shine if you're a big star. And I feel that kind of makes the NBA more appealing to like millennials. Like that, it's that kind of mindset that you have in basketball. That makes sense.
I see that. I can see that.
Yeah. Like basketball is like a little more hip, left socialist kind of sport compared, especially to like the rigid fascist nature of football or like the libertarian nature of baseball. Basketball seems to combine everything that works better.
What you're saying is it's truly America.
Yeah.
Land of the free.
Yes. And you have your mixes in basketball. Like you have, you know, Frank Kaminsky or whomever were big Trump supporters, and they weren't ostracized from the NBA or anything. You're allowed to have your opinions in the NBA. I think that's one of the fun things about that league, is they just let your players be themselves.
The NBA, it's fantastic.
But let's kind of look at how the regular season's kind of been put in the NBA. And the I don't know if you heard the news, Dan, your boy, Kevin Love, not going to be back until late March with a knee injury. Are you scared if you're a Cavaliers fan right now, or do you think they kind of weather the storm? It doesn't really matter if you're the first seed or the second seed.
Yeah, I don't think that stuff matters. I think the more important thing is that LeBron, like, don't put all this pressure on LeBron to make sure that you get some playoff seed, because I think it's more important that LeBron get rested and have his legs.
Yeah,
because he's got a lot of minutes on him. Like, and it's a thing he's even started to talk about. Man, there's a lot of miles on this odometer.
Yeah.
Like, I think they need to be busting ass to get a playoff seed.
And I think LeBron has enough confidence, and he's savvy enough to kind of know when he can play and when he can't. And he kind of has that power in his organization to say, well, I shouldn't play the fourth. We're beating him by 20. Let them go out there.
Yeah, but he is a super competitive guy. And yeah. He's got to know that, like, Kevin Love's gone. Don't try to do all the jobs to make up for it.
No, and I think he's smart enough because he knows, well, it's about that championship. You know, it's not about this regular season game versus the Knicks in, you know, March. It's about, you know, getting to June.
Yeah.
If you're LeBron. And then, you know,
I forgot the Knicks.
Yeah. But then, like, you kind of have, in the other part of the East, though, like, maybe teams that probably can't beat the Cavs, but it seems like we have some young emerging teams that maybe can make a run in a year or two. Like, I look at the Wizards, where things look like they might be starting to click there. I look at Boston, who's still one player away, but Isaiah Thomas becoming one of the bigger stars in the league now.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like the Celtics are just always going to be one player away, though. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what their... Like, I never really understand what their management philosophy is, because it always seems to be, yeah, we're just going to keep stockpiling assets to trade for that one guy that we never actually trade
for. Well, wait till something good falls in our lap, like in 07. Yep. I think
it's kind of just keep waiting for that.
Yeah, but it may happen because I think teams, and this is another thing to kind of the rise of the NBA. Teams today in the NBA are so much smarter than they were even 5 to 10 years ago.
Especially when Ainge pulled off that, you know, the trade that got them Garnett, and when he got Ray Allen, like the league is drastically different as far as, you know, management. I mean, when you really look at the NBA. There's really only two stupid teams now, isn't there? It's like the Knicks and
Nets.
The Knicks and the Kings.
Yeah. And then the Nets
and the Lakers Kings, probably.
Yeah. Well, but I think the Lakers have been a little bit smarter in recent memory. And I think they were put in an awkward spot with Kobe where you can't kind of
Kobe's
rush
a terrible
that guy
player,
out.
But he continued to pretend he wasn't.
Yeah, and you can't kind of rush him out because he is still very popular with the fan base.
Yeah, because Laker fans are stupid.
Yeah. But, I mean, really, the only dumb team, and even the Nets are getting smarter, so really it's just the Knicks are your most... Cause
well,
the Kings.
Kings
really
don't forget
just...
the Kings.
Yeah, well,
the
Kings
and the Knicks are, like, mentally, like, slow.
Yeah. The Kings have made some dumb mistakes, but...
That's an understatement.
I think they've also had some... I think they've had some bad things happen to them, like... I feel, well...
Yeah, like the guy who bought the team. Man, it was really bad when that guy bought the team. That was a really bad thing. Why did it have to be him?
Yeah, but when I watch the Kings, I don't think that's just a bad, awful team that can't go anywhere. I still think, you know, with some nice remodeling, you can make that organization work.
Yeah, by firing basically everybody in charge.
Yeah, well, put you
including
in
the
owner.
Then.
Yeah.
And then the Lakers, but, I'm not really sure... I'm not really sure if I like their long-term vision, if it's like, let's put Magic Johnson in charge of everything. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
There's a guy who really knows
it's
how to build a basketball team.
LA. But, I mean, you know, Dan, we're sitting with an NBA right now where the Clippers have been a good, consistent team for the past, it feels like, 10 years now. Like, how weird is that?
Yeah. 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 The Lakers have been good for long enough that there's probably some kid... who had no idea that the Lakers used to always clown them.
Yeah, that is true. But as we kind of, let's kind of jump to look at All-Star Weekend, Dan. How do you feel about All-Star Weekend as not really as diehard NBA as me? To me, this is one of my favorite weekends of the year for sports. All right, we're back. Sorry, it's some technical issues there. We're still not super sure where we kind of got cut off. We're in the middle of a nice flow conversation there. I'm kind of glad we got cut off, Dan, because you got a little racial there where we got cut off. Probably for the best.
Well, Southern. I'm a Southern wrestling fan. So
yeah, I can't believe you. Well, I can't believe you felt that way about the Polish people.
I mean, it's not the normal thing to slur, but I can't help how I was raised.
But you know, I've never seen a Pole who's good at basketball, so I think you had a good point. But let's kind of jump back. We were kind of in a conversation though about how the NBA we're seeing this kind of resurgence without the marquee teams really being at the top. You know, whether like even Boston, which is still in the playoff mix, isn't one of your top, you know, championship contending teams. It's really all what are traditionally smaller markets. I say that in quotations because San Francisco is a pretty big market.
It's always weird when the Warriors used to get lumped in with smaller markets. It's just like,
yeah.
Well, that's not really a small market. That's just a historically inept, you know, franchise.
Yeah.
It's not really the same thing.
Yeah. So, but this resurgence with the NBA has been fun to watch, though, and it has been kind of on the backs of smaller market teams. Like, you know, Miami even is a giant market, you know, bigger than Atlanta, about the size of Dallas. But they're not the most pop, you know, like, you don't think of, they're not as relevant as, say, the Knicks or the Lakers are. Am I kind of correct there, Nan? Yeah. So, like, this resurgence, you know, whether it's San Antonio, Miami, I want to say... the last few NBA championships have been won by teams that are from non-traditionally popular NBA markets. It's pretty wild. And to see growth with the league with that happening is pretty nuts, to be honest.
I mean, it's just, it's exciting. It's just exciting for an NBA fan who always was told, oh, you know, you're never going to be as popular as this sport, or you're never going to be able to, you know, you've just got this threshold put on, or this ceiling put on you, and it's like, eh, not really. Like, there's really not a ceiling going forward. Like, pretty much everything is on the table as far as growth for the NBA.
Yeah. I think the one real thing holding the NBA back is, like, the failure that has been Digital League Pass. I don't know if you've dealt with them in the past, Dan, but I'm sure you've seen horror stories. League Pass Online, Broadband League Pass, is probably one of the worst broadband, over-the-top, whatever, services in North America. That's not even just sports. I think it's probably one of the worst.
That's hard to hear. I hate that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I used to subscribe. I don't even really use it because most of the time you were, like, 5 minutes behind. And part of the fun with NBA is, I think we have to mention it, is, like, NBA social media, especially NBA Twitter. Oh, yeah. It's probably the funnest sports Twitter, I'd argue, besides maybe, like, wrestling or MMA Twitter. Probably one of the more fun Twitters in sports Twitter world, if you will.
College football Twitter's pretty great. I'm always going to stand for college football Twitter. But basketball Twitter, pro basketball Twitter is pretty good.
Yeah.
There's no way around that.
No, and you know, bring it back to kind of this, the journalism kind of side of the popular of the NBA. We're in like this golden era of excellent NBA writers. Just to name two off the bat, you know, Zach Lowe or Zach Harper. You know, two Zachs shouting out my boys.
You're just starting a Zach world order.
Yes, that's the goal, Dan, is to force you out and to have this show be the Zach Hour. But we do have this, like, especially with writing, though, it feels like there's so much great basketball writing out there right now compared to mostly to any other sport, you know?
Yeah.
Think football might have better writing, but it really doesn't.
Football is the worst, like pro football, at least.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying, like, Chris Brown is basically trying, like a one-man attempt to fix NFL writing, but he's going up a... He's going up the shit creek with that, with only his hand for a paddle.
Yeah,
trying to fix that, you know, mess.
Yeah, and there's not as much creativity. You do kind of get it though. We'll go back to college football writing in general. It seems like there's a lot of fun there. Whether it's what Tom Fornelli or I forget his real name, Ebs at Ebs Ed Bs on Twitter, the Buffalo Man from SB Nation.
Yeah. Spencer Hall?
Yes. Is it Spencer Hall I'm thinking of? Yeah.
Yeah, he's the Year of the Buffalo.
Yeah, Year of the Buffalo Man. So yeah, there's a lot of fun with college basketball, football right now, I think, in the Twitter world, but a little bit more fun on the NBA side, especially with some of these great writers, you know? And I think we talked about it in one of our Lost episodes, I think, but the Bill Simmons, I think, kind of fostered and made it marketable to write about the NBA on the internet. If you have any thoughts on that. So, I've got, like Bill Simmons, especially to me, seems like a guy who made writing about the NBA marketable to a lot of outlets online.
Yeah, Bill Simmons, I mean, it's fun to make fun of him, and he's become old. So,
yeah.
Like, I get it. Like, it doesn't make you a bad person to piss on Bill Simmons. He totally has it coming. And his editor-in-chief at The Ringer wrote a really fucking terrible article this week, you know, or I think it was today, which is just mind-bendingly stupid.
Oh, what was that article? Not to get off track.
About how now writing about sports, like, is just, like, automatically makes you a liberal. And he just, like, talked about how, oh, man, sports writing has gotten so much more liberal in 2016 or 2017 than it used to be, and leaves out the entirety of the fact that part of the main reason is because there's far more people of color and women writing about sports than, like,
yeah,
you know, back in the 50s when it was entirely white men.
A good pat on the back to rich white men, basically.
Yeah, it's just like patting like white dudes on the back for how liberal they are now, instead of like, well, you actually have to share offices with non-white men. You
sounds
fucking creeps.
Sounds eerily similar to a certain Tracy Smothers based essay I saw in the wrestling sphere earlier this week.
Anytime you get a chance to pat yourself on the back for barely clearing the lowest possible bar.
Yes. I realize that the Confederate flag might be kind of racist, so I'm a good person now. And here's a bunch of praise from the Wrestling Twitter sphere about it. But enough about that, Dan. Let's jump into a thing I want to talk about before we hit our technical difficulties, and that's NBA All-Star Weekend. What does that kind of mean to you as a guy who's not as diehard about the NBA?
It means the three-point contest, it means the dunk contest, and it means the celebrity game. I could give a shit about the actual All-Star game.
Yeah, I think the All-Star game is the least fun part. I think Saturday night, it's weird that the NBA is created. It's kind of similar to baseball. The Home Run Derby was so much more fun to watch than the game forever. But the NBA has kind of created this night where Saturday or even Friday to an extent are more fun than the main event with the All-Star weekend.
So, I mean, I think it's because those events don't take as long.
Yeah.
Like, sports in general, people do not want to invest the time to watch sporting events. But especially an exhibition that's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Like, frankly, I think they should, like, go video game rules on the All-Star game and just shorten it to 5-minute quarters.
Yeah.
Like, just see how that changes things. Because who cares? It's an All-Star game. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Or make it, or even to play off your NHL thing, like, even to do multiple, you know, do a bunch of 3-on-3 games or something, you know, in the vein of the Big Three, Ice Cube's new league. Something fun like that, because I don't think the players necessarily, it's not like baseball where they pretend the All-Star game's that important. They kind of know it's just a big weekend to party and have fun.
Yeah, it's like what this really is it's a celebration of the sport.
Yeah.
It's not about, you know, like the sanctity of the game of basketball. It's just like, hey, it's a bunch of people coming together and go, hey, man, basketball's fun.
And yeah, it's... And even more so in the sport, kind of a celebration of the culture that the NBA has kind of brought. Whether that's black culture, white culture, it's this culture that I don't know, for a second it kind of feels like maybe race doesn't matter as much when you're kind of at the All-Star game.
Yeah. It's like a thing it's not about appealing to somebody's grandma. Like, you get those in the playoffs where it's like, okay, this has stakes. Don't you want to see a major sporting event that has stakes?
Yeah.
That's when you get the casual fan. The NBA is the NBA All-Star Weekend is more like, hey, all basketball fans, come in and enjoy a slice.
Yeah, like watch a fun skills competition. Watch Shaq go. You know, watch a bunch of tall men go crazy every time some guy you never heard of gets a slam dunk. It's a fun, and to me, it's the funnest All-Star Weekend in any sport. I don't think any sport really nails it quite like the NBA.
Yeah.
I think
baseball had it. Baseball had it and lost it.
But my problem with baseball was always, though, like, people always respect, like, the Pete Rose hurting, Fosse or whatever his name was.
Yeah, he pretty much ended Ray Fosse's career.
Ruined his career. And, like, people respect that. And it's like, this is a game that doesn't matter. Like, this is why no one cares about the baseball All-Star game anymore.
Here is the split.
Okay.
Basketball is this game that can still be fun even when you're not trying all that hard.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it's always got a little bit of an advantage. But baseball is a game where you can play really hard without adding risk of injury.
Yeah.
Other than like playing, like baseball is a game where, okay, you're trying really hard, and Pete Rose, Ray Fosse, notwithstanding, you trying really hard doesn't mean you're more likely to get hurt.
Yeah.
Like baseball is one of those games where you're either playing it or not playing it. You can't like as a pitcher, like, ease up on a pitch and save your arm. Every pitch you throw increases your odds of getting hurt, whether you're throwing it as hard as you could, as hard as you can or not. It is what it is. If you're playing baseball, you're playing baseball. Football is a game where you either play it all the way or you're not playing it. Like, it's bullshit. Baseball, you can go all the way without really adding all that much risk of injury. And baseball used to have this rivalry between the AL and the NL, and people genuinely wanted to know which league is better. And they killed that with interleague play. In the name of getting a little bit of an extra bump in ticket sales when, you know, LA plays Anaheim and when New York plays each other, in the name of that, they basically killed the All-Star game. And it's never been the same. Like, Bob Costas, it's so infuriating that Bob Costas was right about everything. When he said that interleague play is going to be long-term damaging and it's going to kill the All-Star game, everybody made fun of him. He was right. When he said the wild card was going to water down the playoffs and kill the playoffs, everybody made fun of him. He was right. Like, I could go out now, film myself, you know, pulling my dick out, and it'll get better ratings than a Major League Baseball playoff game.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reality. When you talk about the NBA, when the All-Star game is happening, it's fun because it's just like a bunch of guys standing around watching each other take turns doing something cool, and that's entertaining.
No,
in a way that like other sports aren't at half speed.
It has that embrace of just kind of the pure entertainment spectacles. That kind of helped the NBA kind of really become the number two in pro sports in America.
Right.
I mean, if you want to be down, especially if you look at TV ratings and things like that, NBA is clearly number two. Has that kind of helped the NBA with perception as, you know, this different generation kind of perceives sports where, like, we don't take it as seriously as our fathers and our grandfathers because we kind of know it's a joke. There may be some more important things going on.
Yeah, so I think there's something to that. And I think part of it is that, the NBA is the only league that's honest about the fact that not every game matters and not every single second of this is the most important thing that ever happened. You know, I mean, just look at the pre- and post-game shows. Like, in the NFL, every fucking thing is so goddamn serious.
Yeah.
Like, if a quarterback, like, criticizes how much time they spent stretching, how dare you disrespect your coach? This kind of thing will breed team disunity. Don't you
know
what you're doing?
Kind of like this fascist, kind of like my point earlier, though, like, it's like almost like this feel of weird fascism with football in general, I think, kind of, right?
Yeah.
And I love football, I mean, don't get me wrong, but you do get that vibe from, like, football guys.
Like, and then in the NBA, it's, like, totally acceptable. Like, man, yeah, he just had to take the night off. His knees were hurting.
Yeah.
Like, the old Tim Duncan DNP old.
Yeah.
Like, people acknowledge that every single second of the NBA is not the most important second ever spent in human life.
And I think that kind of not taking it seriously makes the sport more fun and, to me, more marketable to people who maybe didn't grow up with sports kind of in their face, and they kind of see football or baseball or these weird people taking things too seriously, and basketball is just kind of fun.
Yeah, there's a credibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like the NBA has a lot more credibility when it says things to its fans as compared to other sports. Like, when the NBA says, hey, you know, this guy's a star because he's a great player, I feel like people believe the NBA.
Yeah.
The NBA is the Jerry Jarrett of professional sports leagues. They tell the truth enough that when they lie, you believe it.
Yes.
If you lie all the time, nobody believes you.
All right, Dan, but let's transition. I think that turned into a fun discussion, though, about the rise of the NBA and kind of the state of the NBA right now. I think that was nice. In the All-Star break, kind of the unofficial start of the second more important NBA season, and that'll be the playoff push. But let's jump to a little story that came out today, Dan, and that's where it looks like UConn was trying to, what'd you say, like kind of split the baby there?
Yeah,
they
were trying to eat all that cake. This story came out earlier in the week where UConn was flirting with the Big East about going back and joining the Big East for all their sports except football. And the immediate question that came up is, well, what do they think is going to happen to their football team? It seemed like an alumni thing where maybe some important alumni at UConn were talking to some old acquaintances back at the Big East. And, sometimes alumni aren't exactly well-versed on what's realistic. And I think some of those alumni thought, well, we'll just stay in the American for football. We'll just split. And there was the resounding answer from the American Athletic Conference was, no, you will not.
No.
I think the Daily Stampede, which is a wonderful South Florida Bulls website. Mm-hmm. If you are a fan of the South Florida Bulls, and you do not read Daily Stampede, you're some kind of moron.
Yeah.
But they had an article that pretty much summed up the whole thing, which is like, we're not taking your worst sport while you send all your good ones to somebody else.
No, and it kind of brings to a point I brought up earlier, Dan. If you're UConn, when are you really just thinking about dropping football? Can it be that much of a moneymaker for UConn at this point?
Yeah, I mean, the TV contracts are serious, but I think we're starting to hit this point, and this is the main reason I wanted to talk about this with you.
Yeah.
I think we're starting to hit this point where that college football bubble has popped, because for like the last 15 years, every college has been rushing to start a football program. We've seen this since like 98, 99. All of these football programs starting, football programs at schools that didn't have football starting up. And I think we finally started to hit that point where everybody's like, you know what? In a lot of cases, this wasn't really worth the, like, whatever additional dollar we added was not worth. Like in UConn's case, them starting, yeah. them moving their football from FCS, because UConn's always had a football team, but they used to just yeah. compete at the FCS level. Them moving from FCS to FBS, one, they lost the UMass rivalry, which used to be the only thing anybody at UConn cared about when it came to football was, you know, the UMass yeah. game. So you lost that, and now you're in a conference with Central Florida and, you know, Cincinnati and all these schools that you have nothing in common with, while all the schools you used to play are still there in the Big East, playing basketball against each other in a pretty decent basketball league, and yeah. now you're just the only team that matters in this piece-of-shit league, and you're playing Temple. Yeah. Like, if I'm a UConn basketball fan, I think I have a hard time looking at this world that you now live in and going, huh, is this really any better for me? Like, I know my school might be getting a little bit of extra money, but is it going to anything I care about? And look, Idaho is dropping down to FCS this year, after this season. Idaho is saying, you know what? FBS was pointless. All it did was embarrass our school. We're going back yeah. down to FCS where we can win every year. I wonder if we're not going to start seeing this trend of teams going, you know what? Fuck this. This didn't help us. I don't know if UConn will have the guts to do it, because I think UConn still looks up and sees the ACC as like, we could get into the ACC,
yeah.
especially if the ACC adds Notre Dame. It's like, well, yeah. they'll need a 16th team. And as long as the ACC is still on the table, I don't see UConn doing it. But if we look up in 5 years and, you know, Notre Dame and the ACC adds another team other than UConn, I don't think UConn stays around in FBS. I think they drop back down. And, you know, if they do stay in FBS, they go with it, they go as an independent and see what happens.
Yeah. It doesn't make financial sense for UConn to be an independent. Because you're not going to get you're not going to get, like, an NBC contract.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I for UConn, if the only reason I think you stick around in FBS is with the hope of getting into the ACC. The moment you don't get into the ACC, it's like, well, fuck it. Go back to what, like, UConn was fine as a team that was only known for their basketball program. And their football program is still not known. They made yeah. a Fiesta Bowl, and nobody knows what their football yeah. program is. So I think this could be an ongoing trend of some of these schools that dabbled in football to get that sweet football lucre, who are looking up and going, you know what, this really didn't make us all that much money when you figured how much we had to spend to get here.
Yeah. All right, before we move on to our last topic, real quick timeout, Dan. What are we at? 28-7? My food's about to be here, sorry.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, I just saw the guy. I was like, I could have interviewed him on the show, but...
What if you just walked up with your phone or your microphone and just like, hey.
Yeah. Michael, I mean, he looks like he could be a basketball fan.
Sure.
It has been a dream to get like an Uber driver on the show. All right, give me 1 second. Mm-hmm. Right, hi there. Yeah. Yep. All right. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you. All right, there we go. And we're back from our second technical difficulty of the evening, Dan. I kind of blamed my delivery driver for that one. I think that's what happened. Yeah. Little inside info, I got dinner delivered to me, and then we cut off for some reason. So I put full blame on Nathan from Uber and the good people at Uber Eats. So
Yeah, those but, godless Ayn Randian psychopaths.
Yeah, but I'll tip the driver, so you know. But as we close out, Dan, I want to bring up something. I don't know if you saw this last weekend. NBC, I believe, had a live performance of the hit musical Cats on the TV screen. And what I understand, Dan, is you're not the biggest fan of Cats, the musical.
Cats is dog shit, and the only people who like it are, like, weirdos who are, like, crazy cat ladies. Like, nobody else likes that thing.
Or furries.
Even then.
I can see them being into it. Yeah. But I'm going to let you go on your FD. This is our fuck you of the week. It's going to go to Cats. This is from Dan. I'm going to let you get your 60 minutes on. You're Andy Rooney.
Okay, here's my thing. I enjoy musicals. I got a lot of musicals opinions. But here's the thing about Cats. The plot is ludicrous. I still can't really tell you, like, succinctly what even happens. Like, I could not give you a succinct plot summary for Cats. It's fucking mind-numbingly dumb. It's based on a poem. It's full of, like, nonsense words, like the fucking things, like, they're angelical cats. That's not a thing. That's just some, like, weird thing that Andrew Lloyd Webber, like, went to sleep, woke up, and said, "Oh, they'll be angelical cats. Yes, it'll be wonderful." It's the worst Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, and he's done some real stinkers. But, like, this is a guy who did Jesus Christ Superstar. Like, this guy's a genius. Like,
brought back Phantom of the Opera.
Well, half of Phantom of the Opera is great. Yeah. The other half's, like, dog piss.
Like, it's almost two-faced or masked.
Evita is, I mean, my God, Evita's amazing. Basically, but Cats, when he doesn't have to, Andrew Lloyd Webber is great when he doesn't have to actually think of a plot. Like, if he's basing it on, like, a famous, like, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar, not a lot of, like, plot work there. Pretty much just taken from the Bible. You know, Evita, all of that happened. Like, it's not, like, he's not having to really plumb the depths of creativity. Like, he has to have, like, a story handed to him and then him write songs around it. If you ask him to come up with an idea whole cloth, it's probably gonna be insane and stupid. Cats is definitely stupid. Maybe stupider than the one he made about trains where everybody's on roller skates. That one, Starlight Express, that one's probably worse. But yeah, it's just, it's all flash, no substance. There's no good songs in it. There's no good plot. There's nothing to watch. It's just, look at the costumes. And it's like, I'm not seven.
Yeah, and I didn't see the ratings, but I didn't see, like, anyone really talking about this on Twitter or anywhere else. Is this kind of the end of our live musical things on network TV? Because I remember you had Grease, The Wiz, Sound of Music.
Those were all huge.
Yeah.
Like, the reason why those did well is because those are popular musicals.
Well, Cats is well known, though. Well, it's in the lexicon, though. It's got a brand.
It ran on Broadway for 30 years because it had to make its money back. Nobody liked it. Like, here's the dirty secret. If you're a really successful musical, you close in, like, 2 or 3 years because you make all your money and you make all your profit, and then you close it to go away for a while so that you can reopen it around the country. Cats ran on Broadway for 25 years because, one, nobody wanted to see it anywhere else. Like, it's just weirdo New York cat women who wanted to see the thing, and they had to run it forever just to make back the budget from the costumes.
Well, okay, but Dan, is Cats dumber than Hamilton?
Way dumber. Okay, Hamilton is getting shit from leftists because, like, it... Like, they don't, like, they think it's everything. It's become, like, the personification of what they hate about Clinton Democrats.
Yes.
But it's actually a pretty good musical. So it's, like, not really fair. It's not a fair criticism. And I feel like there's a lot of leftist boys who don't like musicals, period, who are just taking out all their hatred of musicals on Hamilton.
On Hamilton. So, yeah, Cats, enjoy Lloyd Webber. Fuck you.
But if you want to see a good musical, okay, you could actually go see it because PBS, a live version was recorded for the PBS Great Performances. Go watch the original, not the original cast. It's with George Hearn. Go watch the George Hearn Sweeney Todd. Amazing. Amazing. You'll fucking throw babies in the air at the end of it. Oh, you want to see a good musical, go see the great performances of Sunday in the Park with George. Amazing. Bring tears to your eyes.
Or go do weeping. Something. Go do weeping. Something a little more manlier.
Jewish, but you'll be weeping. You'll be tears will flood from your eyes.
Or, Dan, you can do something a little more masculine and go suck a dick.
Look, so. Some would say that is the most masculine thing you can
do. The most, you can't get more manly. That's kind of the ultimate football guy move. That's why Sandusky was the ultimate football guy.
Okay.
Before we get out of here, another fuck you. Jerry Sandusky, fuck you. Semper Fi, motherfucker. Asshole.
I don't even know.
He was in the Marines.
I did not know that.
Yeah, but yeah, Jerry Sandusky arrested. Kind of an ugly story because more than likely, probably victimized by his adopted father, and it probably led to all of this happening. Would be my guess, speculation from me, but that's what I would think. Imagine he was probably abused as a kid. I can imagine who might have done it. Yeah,
it's rough. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's motherfuck you. Fuck you.
Way
to
go to a downer after my fun discussion of musical theater.
A quick reminder that Penn State's horrible. I think people forget that. That'll be my last dying breath. Dan, you'll be at my bedside, and I'll say, don't let people forget that Penn State.
And I'll say, I never really liked it when you did that, but in honor of you, I will not let them forget it.
Don't forget, because this is like Pizzagate if Pizzagate was real. And people forget that. Yeah.
One other fuck you of the week. People who think Hedwig and the Angry Inch only existed when Neil Patrick Harris played Hedwig. It's been around for a while, guys. Get your fucking shit together.
Yeah. And that's been our musical talk. So, I think that's it for the week, Dan.
Yeah. It's a good show. Yeah. A lot of technical difficulties, but, you know, the gods were fighting us.
Yeah.
But.
Well, anytime you can slap God in the face, Dan, that's what halfguarded.com is all about. Slapping the maker in the face and do whatever you want.
Sure. So, musicals. That's what this... I mean, that is what halfguarded.com is rebranding itself. It's an all-musical theater.
Musical MMA site. The two M's. Musical MMA... The three... musical and mixed martial arts.
Imagine if an MMA guy used a... Okay, if an MMA guy used a song from musical theater as walkout music, the obvious choice is the theme to Jesus Christ Superstar, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, maybe something for Les Mis.
Do you hear the people sing?
Yeah. Oh, one of the Hamilton raps. Like, my name is Hamilton. Doesn't that make you Hamilton?
It's fun to make money in an American way.
Oh.
But you know what else is musical?
What is that?
That's our friend Jason. He's a big musician. And
he's sitting over here with his guitar next to Kevin Eubanks. So
and he's ready to play us out. So play the music, Jason.